Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 56, section 4, which is old single column, page 639. Okay, so remember what we're doing. We've got this set of sections where they're stepping us through the threefold actuality. And then see, we're going to get personality unification next. But it's not merely the threefold actuality, as you can tell by the titles, that we're really looking at the full potential of the unification of that threefold actuality and the subsequent unity that's established in the wake of that unification. And we noted that it's obvious where that unification ends up being centered by the title of section 2, intellectual unity, not unification, but directly unity, unlike spiritual unification and personality unification. So let's remind ourselves again, it doesn't hurt to just touch bases again with that passage up there in paper 102 that I had us turn to last time. It's in paper 102, page. Section 2. Page. It's on single column, page 1120. And you don't have to turn there if you don't want. I just want to read that full sentence that's at the end of that paragraph we were in last time. So, see, what did I say last time? It was paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth paragraph that starts with even the discoveries. But at the end of that paragraph, so there's a long sentence that starts with but mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're talking about unification, and they say, but mind can never succeed in this unification of the diversity of reality unless such mind is firmly aware of material things, intellectual meanings, and spiritual values. Right, so there's the threefold actuality, right, as the starting point. And bringing in the things, meanings, and values along with the matter, mind, and spirit. Okay, so, it be firmly aware of material things, intellectual meanings, and spiritual values. And then it says, only in the harmony of the triunity of functional reality is there unity. Right, so that intellectual unity of our section back there in paper 56, there's the same word unity. As in triunity. You see it explicitly stated there. And only in unity, again that triunity, is there the personality satisfaction of the realization of cosmic constancy and consistency. I wanted to read that last little bit like I did last time, because notice that they do bring in personality. Okay. See, only in the harmony of the triunity do you have the fullness of the functioning of personality. I mean, that's what personality engages. It encompasses the triunity. You see, so I wanted to just read that and get you to, just have that clear in your mind again. So when we go back to paper 56, you think about the titles of section 3 and 4, so spiritual unification, personality unification. Fundamentally, when all is said and done, it's the personality influence that's encompassing the threefold actuality and is fundamentally initiating the unification. But the immediate means for that unification of the threefold actuality is the spirit element. And that's why we talk about personality as spirit pattern. And it's going to encompass all three elements, not just going to take a hold of spirit, but that's its inroad, that's its initial handle. And you know what we're thinking about is more technically why. It's striving to establish this triunity. You know, you've got your basic individuality. If that individuality is going to be something besides all of the separate elements of that individuality, there has to be some other fact that is fundamentally an influence upon that individuality to bring it into association. Right? That fact is the spirit element in the threefold actuality. You have that simple unity of spirit, you know, where you matter, mind, spirit, individuality, associativity, unity. Right? So that unity, that simple unity of spirit, right? That is the element that personality needs to grab a hold of and bring into juxtaposition to the individuality to establish this, the consequent associativity, and then encompass it all in a triunity. You see, so the reason that both these sections are, such and so unification, spiritual unification, personality unification, is there, it's talking about the same fact in two different ways. The influence that's behind the whole unification, the personality, and then that direct means for the unification. That simple unity being brought into play. If there wasn't that simple unity in play in the universe, there wouldn't be any associativity, let alone some wholeness of a triunity. I mean, just think about how profound that is. The fact that you can hear my voice, that I'm in some sort of an association with you. Right? There's a linkage. We're interacting here. I'm speaking, you're hearing, hopefully you're understanding, right? If I'm constructing my sentences well enough, I mean, that whole interaction, see, there's an associativity there, and we just take that for granted. Mm-hmm. It's not magical, right? There wouldn't be any association between any individuality, no two automatons would ever associate or anything, right? If there wasn't this fundamental unity in play, right? You know that even though you can't poke spirit substance, it has to be here because we're associating and nothing happens magically. And personality is there to go beyond what just happens sort of energetically, to take a hold of that spirit and purpose it definitively towards a very unique end in eternity that only your absolutely unique personality can pattern. To take a hold of that and creatively establish a harmony. So go beyond just what's kind of there naturally, you might say, because of the presence of deity and whatnot in the greater picture. But you entering in individually and creatively establishing a triunity encompassed by your unique purposing potential, your personality, you're going to make your unique contribution to the ever-enlarging harmony in existence beyond what the Supreme is, embodies. Right? So beyond the ocean, beyond being a drop of water in that ocean and just being a means for the Supreme to achieve its ends, right, you are going to
separate yourself from that and contribute originally, uniquely to the harmony of the total. Okay? So when we're talking about personality unification, you are in a greater sense talking about tri-unification, see? That's fundamentally what the whole point is to have that purposing in play via personality. Okay, so that it's
unique purposing.
And when all is said and done, see, that personality is identified with a mindal self. In that mindal self, there is a subsequent unity. You know, that triunity, the harmony of that triunity. So that's the intellectual unity that they're talking about in section two. A personalized self. Right? The point is not to have personalized matter or personalized spirit substance. The idea is to have a personalized mindal self. And in that mindal self, the simple unity and the individuality are represented within it, and there's a tri-unity established within that mindal domain that personality is identified to. And a lot of times the revelators, for simplicity, when they're talking about a personalized self, they'll refer to it as a personality, but don't ever forget. A self is an object that you can point at. The existential influence that is personality, that's not an object. So don't confuse the object with what's behind the object, the influence from eternity that's behind the object, the personality itself. Okay? Especially when the revelators, just for simplicity, are just saying, personality when they're actually talking about a personalized self. They're not literally talking about that abstraction of, the pattern, the spirit pattern, just unto itself, unidentified with a self. Okay. We are trying to think about what the full potential of a mindal self is. It goes beyond just mind. It can bring in a representation of matter and a representation of spirit, and it can hold a triune construct, and personality influence can encompass that, and within that mindal self, there is a new harmonized object that exists in the universe of universes that can't be brought into existence any other way except through you and in you. Right? You're not sovereign out there. You can't take matter, mind, and spirit energy out there and construct this. Right? It's within you. Right? The Supreme is sovereign out there. You're sovereign. This is your space in that mindal self. That's where you are going to create, if you will, right, your harmony, where you're going to apply your creativity and establish harmony. Establish this unification of personality unification.
And that, our purposing of that personality, or the personality purposing that is and the purpose thereof is to be able to contribute that uniqueness?
Well, to go beyond just the object, and think about that purposing, like I was pointing out, when you're purposing your mindal self, genuinely with your personality, you are orienting, directing that self toward some goal in eternity, right?
That's what I'm asking.
Right, that it's not just going to be something that is useful in a scaffolding way, in a passing moment way. Right? You're going to try to actually identify that self with eternity. Get it to be something that is eternally useful, not just temporarily useful.
Gotcha.
And that's obviously a pretty big challenge to try to have such foresight. But you know, the whole point is just to be striving for that, to be striving to somehow purpose yourself beyond the moment, beyond the immediate moment and place. Right? I mean, yes, you have to take care of those issues too. Right? But
the bigger picture.
You want to be, you know, seek first the kingdom of heaven. You know, seek first to purpose yourself in some very transcendent way that's independent of the time or the place, now or then, right? Or there. And then once you've done that as best you can, in that context, now do the things, you know, here and now. And like Jesus said, if you do it in that order, if you start with eternity first and then get to time will go better for you. Mm-hmm. Things will work better in time if you start with eternity. But if you try to start with time and then somehow delusionally exalt it into something that has eternal significance,
magic.
No, it's not going to go well for you or others. Okay. All right, so let's see what they have to say here about personality.
Four, personality unification. The Universal Father is a divinely unified personality. Hence, will all his ascended children who are carried to paradise by the rebound momentum of the thought adjusters who went forth from paradise to indwell material mortals in obedience to the Father's mandate. Likewise, be fully unified personalities ere they reach Havana.
Okay, so you're going, okay, so why are they bringing in that? Most of that paragraph is sort of setting it up for the final statement. But you can see how it starts out. Obviously, they're going to pick this up again. This whole issue, remember how they keep doing this. They keep trying to leverage off of what you know about the Universal Father to get you primed for the recognition that they're trying to get you towards. They start with this simple little statement. They say the Universal Father is a divinely unified personality. Hence will all his ascended children who are carried to paradise by the rebound momentum of the thought adjusters who went forth from paradise to indwell material mortals in obedience to the Father's mandate likewise be fully unified personalities ere they reach Havana. Okay, so as I was saying, you got that middle part that, you know, is just giving you that basic fact that you're given this thought adjuster, so spirit gravity can grab a hold of that and pull you back to where that thought adjuster came from. Okay. But that first statement, so the Universal Father is a divinely unified personality. You know, like I was saying, they're always trying to leverage off of what we know about the Universal Father as a way to get us to recognize the more abstract, subtler things that they're fundamentally trying to put forward between the lines in what we're reading here. You know, so they're bringing in that idea that the Universal Father is a divinely unified personality. So in some way, his nature must foreshadow, if you will, this personality unification that we're talking about. If he's a unified personality, okay. But before they get to that, that final statement in that little paragraph is. That idea of you're working your way back to the Isle of Paradise, and being fully unified personalities, ere they reach Havana. Okay, so way back, you ought to remember
something about this. You don't have to turn there, but I'll just remind you, for those who want to go back and look it up, in paper 26, section 4, there's it's on page 290. There's a whole block there that speaks about what has to be established before you're allowed into Havona, before you're allowed into the central universe. If you've already looked it up, that's don't answer. See if someone can remember who hasn't looked it up. There's this fully unified personality. There's something that's finished. It has to be finished before you get to Havona. You have a perfection of something. Does anyone remember what that is? Perfection of purpose, yes. Right. Perfection of purpose. Right. That's what they're hearkening back to, referring to here. To be a fully unified personality is to have that perfection of purpose that that they were describing back there. Okay. So, does anyone remember, and I won't have you answer this, but do anyone remember exactly what that means, perfection of purpose? Right. You have these two consecrations that we talk about all the time, right? You have consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father on the one hand, and you have consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother on the other hand. So those two basic tasks that you're set to, which one does it sound like you've completed when you achieve perfection of purpose? Right? If we were just talking about, yeah, you can go ahead if you.
The first.
Right, the consecration of the will, obviously, yes, right. Right? See, so that whole bit of relationship to the Father, right, that, what they mean by a fully unified personality here is someone with that perfection of purpose, quote unquote. In other words, someone who has finished that consecration of their will to the perfect will of God the Father. Okay? And remember that will is just a potential. Personality is individuated will. Personality, as it's bestowed upon you, is just a potential. Now, to consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father is to consecrate your potential to the perfect potential of God the Father. Not talking about actualization, we're talking about full potentialization. Right? You have to be fully potentialized. You have to have finished that potentialization. You have to be perfect in that regard before you enter Havona.
All the perfect beings live there.
Right. So even though you have a lot of actualization to do, and remember you can finally really get to it when you get to Havona, you have to have, when you begin to now fully actualize that personalized self, it has to be done in perfection, with perfection of purpose. With a perfection of will, right, behind it. Okay, so they're bringing that up, wanting you to think about that whole potentiality aspect and your full consecration to it.
Can you explain that one part? I don't understand.
Yep.
What it says, who are carried to paradise by the rebound momentum of the thought of justice.
Right, so the rebound momentum is kind of just a poetic way of saying, okay, he tosses out the thought adjuster and it bounces back to where it came from. It has a rebound momentum, right? It's a it's a perfectly elastic collision, so it bounces back just as far as he threw it out, right? It goes out, gets, makes it all the way back to the aisle. Yeah, that's a poetic way of just reminding you that, you know, when he actually embeds a spirit fragment in you like that, now there's this literal object that spirit gravity can grab a hold of and pull you up to paradise like an elevator, right? Right. I mean, you're literally drawn to paradise by spirit gravity. Right? You know, in contrast to the material gravity that would hold you down or hold you back. But of course, it's handy to be held down or held back when you don't want to get ahead of yourself right away in your ignorance, right? So, right, the grace of material gravity that you don't just immediately go flying, you know, and getting ahead of yourself, okay? But, yeah, so that's just, you know, that rebound momentum. In other words, you know, having spirit gravity pull you up. All right, so again, this issue of why are they wanting you to kind of get thinking about, you know, the potential that you have in relation to the Father. Well, if you have a potential in relation to the Father, then the Father must be inherently a potential in some way. And that's what they're getting at. So see what they say here next.
Personality inherently reaches out to unify all constituent realities. The infinite personality of the first source and center, the universal Father, unifies all seven constituent absolutes of infinity and the personality of mortal man, being an exclusive and direct bestowal of the universal Father. Likewise, possesses the potential of unifying the constituent factors of the mortal creature. Such unifying creativity of all creature personality is a birthmark of its high and exclusive source and is further evidential of its unbroken contact with this same source through the personality circuit, by means of which the personality of the creature maintains direct and sustaining contact with the Father of all personality on paradise.
Okay, so kind of a big big paragraph to bite off and chew. So step through it. So that very first statement is kind of a, you know, real key thing that, you know, at least the essence of it you ought to have burned in your memory, that personality inherently reaches out to unify all constituent realities. And we were, the specifics of that is what we were talking about up front, right? That you fundamentally have, you know, this, you're given this potential in personality to engage whatever and harmonize it, to produce the harmony that that is the point of the evolutionary process here. Okay. So it inherently reaches out, and like I was saying, encompasses. Think of it, reaching out, that grasp of personality, and encompassing, and unifying all the constituent elements, you know, in that encompassment. And here you see them bringing in this leverage point of the Father. So they're saying, so think about the universal Father. See, so they say that the infinite personality of the first source and center, the universal Father. And again, they're reminding you that if you want to really emphasize the first source and center as a personality, you call the first source and center the universal Father. Unifies all seven constituent absolutes of infinity. Okay, so what are they wanting you to think about there? Obviously, you know, within himself, that seems pretty straightforward. But what about those other six absolutes? I mean, what do you have? You have two sets of three. Right? And we were just talking about how personality encompasses the triunity, right? Of individuality, associativity, you know, and simple unity. Right? That it encompasses, you know, that material, mindful, spiritual, threefold actuality. And what do you have in those two sets of three absolutes? You have, you have three, of potentiality relative to matter, mind, and spirit, and three of actuality relative to matter, mind, and spirit. And so they're saying that, both in terms of potentiality and actuality, the Universal Father encompasses that threefold actuality. Now, why? I mean, now he doesn't literally encompass those and glue them together into one thing or something. Right? What are they talking about? That threefold actuality, be it potentiality or actuality, we think of from the individuality viewpoint is coming from the first source and center. That you have this initial altogether and you individuate out that which is delegatable, or that which is individuatable. Right? That the Father has the essence of all three within him. And hence, his personality encompasses that essence of all three within himself. Now, you can kind of think of, when you go forward from the three and you produce a harmony, subsequently, if you back up, you can kind of think of the Father as a sort of a pre-harmonized fact. Right? It's the three quote-unquote harmonized before they were separated and subsequently harmonized. Right? Remember how they kept talking about monothetic, when we were talking, earlier. Right? That idea of it all being together as one within the Father. Again, they're trying to leverage off of that to get you to think about how if the Father, because of his nature, just innately encompasses that threefold and brings it together as one, as it is within himself, then if the Father gives you personality, it's just inherently going to do likewise. Right? Only now, it's literally engaging a threefold actuality and encompassing it, right? And harmonizing it. So that's the point, that they're trying to get you to think about how the potential for the personality that the Father gives you is inherent in it because it reflects his inherent nature, right? As this unifying of threefold phenomenon.
So the Father has all these personalities within him. And then
not anymore. Well, no, yeah, initially, no. Yeah, right, yeah, right, okay.
In the very beginning.
Yep.
So then he spits them all out.
Yep.
And all of us are here,
right.
Everywhere.
Right.
And once we reach the potential and we become actualized to what he intended us to be, then it goes back to the Father. And because that we actualize what he gave us in the first place, that's why it unifies with him.
Well, we haven't gotten to that. You're jumping ahead to the next thing they're going to bring up. You'll see how exactly that happens, what you're thinking of. Mm-hmm. You know that it's got to be something like that. Mm-hmm. That's coming up here in just a little bit. At that point. So just hold that thought, and we'll explain that, exactly how that works. Okay, but initially we're just trying to think about, why the personality ought to be this kind of an influence that it is. Why does it do this? When it identifies, why does it function this way? Why does it want to harmonize things into a triunity? See, because it's inherent. That's the point they're trying to make. And so, see, when you think about the first source and center like that, you can think of the first source and center as the potentiality of harmony. Right? In the same way that you've got three potentialities as the three absolutes, a potentiality of individuality, a potentiality of associativity, a potentiality of unity, in the simple unity sense, right? For the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute, and the deity absolute. That first source and center can be thought of as a potentiality of harmony. And the Father is doling out measures of that potentiality for harmony. That's what a personality pattern is. Right? A little, yeah. He doesn't keep all of that potentiality of harmony within himself. He delegates out as much as is delegatable. Right? So everyone has a little measure of this potentiality of harmony. You know, and getting into Havona means that you've fully primed that. You've got all that potentiality of harmony in, you know, now can be actualized. You know, it took you all the way, you know, to finishing your education on Havona, I mean on Uversa, right? Before you went to Havona.
Now it's graduate school.
Right, in that, you know, in that finishing school on Uversa. It took you all that way to get to the point where you really could get at all the potentials, right? Of harmony, and you can really try to manifest it now. You remember how you know they speak about harmony's relationship to Havona, right? You know, that's the language there, the tongue there, right? Yep.
Winston's asking, so is the will of the Father potential or action?
Will is potential. See, and that's the key. Will is only potential. That's not historically the way people have used the word, but that's the way the Revelators are using it. And if you don't interpret the Revelators' use of the word will that way, you're going to overplay the statements. The exercise of will is volition. Will is just will. It's just potential. Right? I haven't actualized anything yet. It's just a potential. Right? Right? So, you know, consecrating your will is not about, you know, all sorts of, you know, body motions and whatnot. Right? It's just a potentializing. Yeah. The will of the Father, right, is not a whole sequence of actions. Right? That's getting into the way, and that's a more complicated issue. Right? You know, remember we talked about that, about that whole bit of you know, the doing of the will of God is nothing more or less, right? And that whole statement, right? A lot of people make it more. Right? It's just an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. It's not even sharing the inner life with God. That's going a step further. Right? It's just the willingness, right? Because it's just the potentializing. Relative to the Father, you're just potentializing the phenomenon. So they give you that you know, point of reflection with the absolutes and the first source and center. And then they say, and the personality of mortal man being an exclusive and direct bestowal of the universal Father, likewise, see, like they're saying, just, you know, it's got to do likewise, possesses the potential. See, just possesses the potential. Will is just a potential. Personality is just a potential. Okay? If you're reading something, like I said a little bit ago, if you're reading something in the book, and it says personality, blah, 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 and you can tell it's not talking about just the potential, that's a good clue that they mean personalized self there. Right? You've got some actualization of that potential in a self, and it's doing stuff. It's acting. Right?
The self is what gives it the individuality.
The self is the domain in which the potentials can actualize. Right, a potential has to actualize somewhere within something. Can't just, you know, actualize nowhere. There has to be a place for those potentials to actualize. It's within the self that those potentials actualize as a personalized self. So like I was saying there, see, so the likewise possesses the potential of unifying the constituent factors of the mortal creature, you know, within the mind. Get the individuality, associativity, and the unity, simple unity, you know, together in a harmony in the mind. Then they just sort of, you know, remind you that, you know, it's this birthmark of its high and exclusive source, and et cetera. Okay, and then that whole bit about, and is further evidential of its unbroken contact with this same source through the personality circuit. Okay, this is getting to where Pam was bringing up just a minute ago. He said we needed to get to that point here first. Okay, see, by means of which the personality of the creature maintains direct and sustaining contact with the father of all personality in paradise. Remember that the universal father is the volitional absolute. Not the personality absolute, that's second source and center. First source and center is the volitional absolute. That personality circuit, quote unquote, as it's called, right, is not, you know, little, you know, imagine some sort of little blobs of personality going around and around in a circle, okay? What it's a, because the anchor point of that circle is not the, is not a personality absolute, it's a volitional absolute. You know, what's flowing in that circuit is the exercise of will, volition. All of this potential is doled out, right? And as it's actualized, all of that volition, all the exercise of all the will in the universe of universes, all flows in one vast infinite circuit, right? It's all together as one coordinated volition in that circuit. But it isn't just one being doing all of the exercising of will, and hence, of course, it's all going to be coordinated together. No, it was as delegated as possible. It was infinitely delegated. Okay? But when all that potential begins to actualize as volition, it is all in one infinite circuit, right? Anchored on that, you know, in that volitional absolute. Okay? So it's through the exercise of will that you are, you know, synchronized, connected with the Father. You know, like they're saying here, maintains direct and sustaining contact. It's in that context of the exercise of your will. Okay. And you know, it's that free will, where is it sovereign? Not in the external world. You're not in contact with the Father by the special way that you arrange the molecules in the external world because you think God told you to do that.
No incense.
And therefore, you know, you're in contact with the Father. Okay? Which is what humans have always imagined. It's like, no. It's only in that inner life when you use that personality's grasp on spirit to influence your mind, right? To purpose your mind beyond what happens naturally. Right? Your mind follows all kinds of natural laws, that mind energy. When you do something artificial with that mind instead of what it does naturally, right? When you engage it through spirit with your personality, and you alter the normal causal sequence in that mind energy system, you have joined in that volitional circuit. Right, you've struck step with the Father. Right, you're in contact with Him in the infinity of that as a circularity of that circuit. Right,
it is His will.
Right, I mean. How, you know, you think about how could I synchronize with an infinite being, you know, who's literally, you know, sort of like extensively infinite, and I'm just this tiny little finite thing. You know, how could I ever synchronize with that? Right? You know, it's like walking up to some giant Buddha and all you can see is his belly button. Right? How could you synchronize with this whole vast infinite fact? Right? This is how. You can't do it, you know, in some sort of spatial way, for instance, right? But you can strike step with infinity in the infinite, you know, size, if you will, of this circuit that you spread your volition through Just recognizing that you've synchronized with eternity and infinity in that act of volition. Yeah, and see, and that's fundamentally, see, you have to be imposing something on your mind that's of eternity. Right? The things that are just of time, those are decisions. Right? A choice is different. A choice is this thing that synchronizes with this infinite eternal circuit. Right? That goes beyond any time and place. Yep.
I'm getting a picture of two selves are asserting themselves. We have self-assertion. So the personalized, one may be a personalized self, the other's merely a self with attendant personality. So, well, how can I as an individual determine, well, it's this one acting as a personalized self and this is just self-assertion? It's, you have to see, you have to look behind actual action.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It'll have a different flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. For those of you in the webinar, he's bringing in this whole issue of how can I distinguish between just the self-assertion of a self and the actual manifestations of a personalized self.
Still the same self-assertion.
Right. I mean, subjectively, you can't tell the difference, right? It's just a self acting. You have to have insight to penetrate through the object of that, you know, that self, to see, is there something behind it in eternity or not? You know, your insight sees through the temporal object to eternity, and either it sees something there or doesn't. Right? Are the actions of this self predicated on eternity or not? That's what it is to use your insight as a human to distinguish. I mean, people can't tell the difference between a human and an animal because they're just looking at the object. And as taught as an object, there's no difference, basically, you know, especially when humans, you know, aren't even, you know, doing anything that requires the sixth or the seventh adjutant, right, as just a self. Right? It's just a subjective object, you know, there's no difference. You know, but can you see purposing coming from eternity that's behind that object, behind that self, or not? And obviously the place you want to start with this distinction is not with your neighbor, it's with yourself. Right? The scary thing is starting with yourself. Right? And get to the point where you have the courage to discriminate between the mere functioning of your mind or self, which you love to exalt, into being very grand stuff, right? And that which your insight can, you know, can penetrate through that self and see something in eternity behind that self, right? Are you doing something genuinely profound, or are you just functioning as a fancy animal and are delighted with how fancy you are, right? Because you can be a lot fancier than a chipmunk, okay? But that fancy animal is still just a fancy animal. You know, it's just an object in time. Right? Is there something connected to eternity? And eternity is being downstepped into actions in time. You know, and one way that you can begin to appreciate that is thinking about your actions beyond the immediate moment. You know, beginning to recognize if what you're doing isn't just for the sake of the immediate place and time. And actually, I should say time and place. I try to correct myself all the time. The revelators would like you to say time and place instead of place and time, like we tend to do, because they're trying to get us to properly think of time and space, you know, in their proper relationship. You know, where you have space, and then there is motion in that space. So there's time added to that that space. So it's time and place. It's like it's time and space.
Space and motion is how they use that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but anyway, I digress. But you know, there's all of these precisions that does just remind you of in general, we're talking about things that require very precise separation of thoughts in your head, right? Being able to separate and hold separate, you know, the difference between, you know, the appearance and the reality of a mindful self, you know. On the surface, it will just appear to be just merely that, a mindful self. But with your insight, you can see, no, there's a reality here. There's a connection to eternity behind that. It goes beyond what immediately meets the eye, what's going on here. Like I'm saying, starting with yourself, you recognize that you're doing something that's transcendent of just the needs of the moment, especially just the needs of the moment for yourself. See, an obvious way to start to get beyond and get connected to eternity is to go beyond yourself. It's like, well, if I can, in the moment, if I'm at least doing it for more than myself, if I'm doing it for others too, see, it's baby steps, you know, moving until eventually you can actually see yourself as a child of eternity that's attempting to do things in time, mm-hmm. right? Instead of just a fact of time that has dreams of eternity that'll never be realized, because no matter how much you try to bootstrap time into eternity, it won't.
And that's because you have to put your will, like you said, the volition of God is the first thing. So like that one sentence in the book says, when man consecrates his will to the doing of the Father's will, when man gives God all that he has, then does God make that man more than he is.
See, more than just that fact, that object in time, that temporal object, and its drop of water in the ocean nature.
Right? So, you know, that makes me excited to think about this. Sure. Because, you know, you think, all of a sudden I realize that this person here with this will, I mean, the will is given from the Father, so I have to direct it always to trying to do with my, you know, my will as he would have me do. And then with the second source and center, you know, let my personality shine forth, something like that.
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, see, that's what we're trying to get at. We're trying to get at a recognition of how much potential we have. Instead of trying to make something out of nothing, actually grab a hold of something. And then you don't have to make it anything. It is already. Grab a hold of your real nature. You've been given this gift to actually start with eternity. Right? And it's like, well, how can I, you know, how could that be? Well, because it came from eternity. Right? Right? It's of eternity. And it allows you, through grace, to start with eternity and then deal with time. Right? So eventually, you can function in time with a peace that passes all understanding, because it's the peace of eternity, not the peace of time. Right? And fundamentally, there is no peace in time. And that's why it's so hard to find. Right? People try really hard. It's like, well, if I just arrange the molecules really cleverly, I'll have, you know, it's an illusion. Right? There isn't really peace in time. Time is an ever-changing, you know, thing. It never know when it's going to just be, you know, turned on end, right? You've got to, you know, start with eternity and stabilize yourself in eternity, and then slowly start to work on time. Okay.
And within this context, the three cosmic intuitions, we can utilize them to help us.
Well, Once you've taken a hold of eternity, the three cosmic intuitions give you the means to figure out how to wisely apply your relationship to eternity to time. It doesn't just happen magically, automatically. It's as you do these cool things in time, just because you grabbed a hold of eternity, right? Right? You have to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, and then the three cosmic intuitions are the fundamental mechanism for, you know, initiating that relationship, right, to the way to apply eternity to time. Right? You have the will to apply eternity to time, but you don't have the way yet. No matter how much you imagine that you automatically, magically do, right? You don't. Yeah. And it's especially sobering to remind yourself that the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto is assuming that you automatically have the way.
So what's the way?
Right. That's that whole the wisdom, insight, and foresight, the synchronization with the mother. Right, to be able to understand how you can take this eternal perspective and apply it in this very circumscribed location and in time, you know, in these very, very limited, you know, fleeting circumstances. How can I do something well right now? I have this desire to do something because I've been primed by the Father, but you know, eventually you recognize you'd like to do something well, not just do something, mm-hmm. right? You know, you don't want to just be that religionist that, you know, they may act unwisely, they may even act irreligiously, but they act. I mean, you don't want to be something that's just motivated to act, and who cares about, you know whether
then
it's...
Then you don't use the Father's will if you do that.
No, but see, no, again, see, the Father is just the potential.
Yeah. Right? But I mean, if you just said, though, that wouldn't be the correct way to be using your own volition.
Right, well, you want to exercise your will, but you want to exercise it well.
Mm-hmm. Not just labor.
See, and it isn't automatically exercised well. If will automatically exercised well, then no one could go to iniquity. Right? Iniquity is the poster, you know, an iniquitous person is a poster child for someone who exercised their will in a very unfortunate way. Right?
And they were not.
They used it to destroy themselves.
So what happens then with God when that happens? I mean, when you think about it, that's his will he's given to us to be able to manifest, and then we do something like that.
Right, you use it to just destroy yourself, right? To depersonalize yourself.
It would probably destroy a bit of him too. I mean, he would probably be deeply grieved.
Well, I mean, again, he has infinite inertia. You're not going to harm an infinite fact.
But I'm saying that doesn't that grieve?
But again, that remember how this works. That will. It doesn't disappear.
Goes to the Supreme.
Right? It becomes part of God the Almighty, right? Yeah, right. So, I mean, that will, is indestructible. I can't destroy my will. Mm-hmm. I can just destroy myself with my will. Right. Yeah. I can sever the connection of that personality to myself. I mean, going to iniquity is, breaking that connection. You know, that personality influence, that influence from eternity no longer identifies with that self in time. I use it to destroy that link that was put there by grace. Okay, but, so the self, and eventually, it's as if it never was, that self, but that will is still there. And it will continue to purpose. It just won't do it via that self anymore. It'll do it in the context of the ocean, rather than the context of the drop that decided it didn't want to separate itself from the ocean.
So it takes something that's beautiful and separates itself from the beautiful, and then it becomes nothing, and then the part that was beautiful remains with the will.
You see, the potential in will is inherently beautiful. The potential is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's up to you whether or not you actualize that potential as beauty or ugliness. So the trick is it's a definitive fact, but you can orient it, one way or 180 degrees. Right? I mean, it's a direction, but it's not fixed towards the positive. You can rotate it 180 degrees. That's the whole thing you got to remember about free will, right? That it's not automatically good. Like I said, again, that's the assumption of the third principle. Mm-hmm. you know, that all exercising of your will is inherently good. It's like, no, you have to find the objectivity to apply it properly. Right? It's not going to if it automatically applied properly, then you know your existence would be pointless.
That's true.
The whole point is have free will, mm-hmm. Right?
Self-exaltation isn't just wrong some of the time; it's wrong all the time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Right. Yeah, and you can kind of see how the humility is, and the whole point is to be part of this one infinite volitional circuit. Right, not to be the volition, right? This self-exaltation that we do, this self-righteousness, right? You want to humbly, you know, take that which was given to you, and synchronize it back into the whole of that circuit, right? But it doesn't. But you don't lose it. It remains yours. You have a grip on it as it goes around and around. You know, it doesn't just melt back in. To God the infinite. See, God the infinite is where there's this circuit, but there's only one being, you know, that's exercising will in that circuit. Right? There needs to be an infinite number of beings, and each of them maintains their grasp on that measure of volition, but it's all as if it was one in that circuit. Right? That's that personality circuit. So, I don't want to go on forever here, but
question on the
oh, is it a question on the webinar?
Yeah, John Stevens is asking: is this circuit really connected to the Father or the Supreme Being until we reach Nirvana?
No, the circuit is anchored in the volitional absolute, the universal Father. The thing that you're wondering about is. Well, that seems like a very transcendent thing for me to be tied to, but remember, what's the actual conductor? You know, you got this circuit. There's some sort of conductor that this volition is flowing in. It's not a material conductor. It's not a mind energy conductor. It's not a spirit substance conductor. Right? It's deity is the substance. Right? I mean, the circuit is within Mother Deity. That's the point of them using that statement of circuit, so that you don't think magically, like somehow, you know, there's a vacuum, you know, and you know, there's the Father somewhere, and then there's a bunch of these objects, you know, we're all in this vacuum, this emptiness, and we magically are all linked together. No, I mean, if you know, there can't be nothing in between the two of us. For us, if we're going to be connected, there has to be something that's bridging the gap, right? She is the way for that volition to flow, right? I mean, it's through her that circuit flows, right? But it's not her circuit. She's not anchoring it any more than the Spirit of Truth isn't her personal spiritual ministry. If you're talking about the Creative Mother Spirit, you know, take it down local here, right? The Spirit of Truth is not her personal spiritual ministry, but it gets to us through her, right? She's the way for his ministry to get to us. He can't get the ministry to us himself. He's not ubiquitously present as a spirit substance, right, that he can conduct a spirit ministry through, right? Only she is, right? You know, the ministry is within her. This personality circuit is within the mother, you know, the fullness of Mother Deity from way, you know, obviously the final, you know, facet of that Mother Deity is our Creative Mother Spirit, right? But that Mother Deity goes all the way up, it's in that fullness of Mother Deity that there is this circuit. Remember, there's the infinite Mother Spirit way up at the top there too. There's Mother Deity that goes, you know, plus the eternal Mother Son. There's Mother Deity that goes all the way up, directly interfacing with the Universal Father, right? Right. So he, you know, you can think of that circuit. He's plugged into the, you know, the one end of Mother Deity way up there, and it gets downstepped through Mother Deity all the way to us down here. Right? But it's all one contiguous circuit within her ubiquitous presence. Right? Doesn't have to jump over any gaps, you know. She's ubiquitous, high, you know, vertically and horizontally everywhere. Okay, so, all right, so anyway, so kind of, okay, kind of get back. We got way off in kind of some of the details there. But the key is that they're trying to get you to think about how the Father, the universal Father, can be thought of, you know, their first source and center can be thought of as the potentiality of harmony. And that we are looking for looking towards actualizing that potential that came from that potentiality, that reservoir, if you will, of potentiality, of harmony.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Why do you use the word potentiality instead of potential?
Just because I want to use a more abstract conceptual term when I say potential, just think about that, the difference in how the two words feel, potentiality and potential. Potential sounds like it's much more specific, like you've got that potential right there that you can point at. Okay, there's a potential. If you want to speak collectively, you know, more conceptually about potentiality. Harmony is not sort of just one flavor, right? So just think about the fact that your absolute unique personality is going to encompass something, you know, and establish this harmony. There's obviously an absolute unique quality to that harmony because of your absolute unique potential. And so harmony is a complex phenomenon. And so you want to speak in more sweeping, generalized terms, to use that more philosophic term of potentiality. I mean, see, potentiality, what is that? It's potentialness. To say potentiality, the ity is like a ness. See, you're speaking more philosophically, whereas to say potential is speaking more scientifically. Like gravitational potential. Yeah. So that's why especially if I'm going kind of really philosophic and abstract to say things like individuality, associativity, unity, the potentiality, see, I'm speaking very philosophically, right? A little less scientifically. All right.
Thank you.
Yep. No, that's a good question. Okay, all right, so let's get this next paragraph, see what they say here next.
Notwithstanding that God is manifest from the domains of the sevenfold up through supremacy and ultimacy to God the Absolute, the personality circuit, centering on paradise and in the person of God the Father, provides for the complete and perfect unification of all these diverse expressions of divine personality so far as concerns all creature personalities on all levels of intelligent existence and in all the realms of the perfect, perfected, and perfecting universes.
Okay. So now let's see what they're doing. They're going beyond that initial little suggesting example about the Father. Okay, so notwithstanding that God is manifest, okay, now when you read that, you should be thinking in the most generalized terms. God means personalized deity. Notwithstanding that personalized deity is manifest from the domains of the sevenfold, you can see the sevenfold, the facet of deity. See, it doesn't say God the sevenfold. They're getting you to think about deity, and you have lots of personalizations of deity, different facets of deity that are personalized, like the facets that's called the sevenfold. So notwithstanding that personalized deity is manifest from the domains of the sevenfold up through supremacy and ultimacy to God the Absolute, and again, you have a facet of deity that's called the Absolute, personalized as God the Absolute, the personality circuit centering on paradise and in the person of God the Father, and notice how they flipped, didn't say universal Father, but they actually spoke in terms of the facet of deity, the Father, and the personalization of that deity is God the Father. So see, if you're thinking, they're shifting gears here a little bit and trying to get you to go beyond the example in the individuality viewpoint and think about a little bit bigger picture. So that provides for the complete and perfect unification of all these diverse expressions of divine personality. Let me just stop there. We were just speaking of that a little bit ago. I mean, it doesn't matter high or low, far and wide. All of this can be one personality circuit in the ubiquity of Mother Deity. And the other thing that they're getting at there is, for the more advanced student, when they shift gears around basically to the unity viewpoint instead of the individuality viewpoint and start talking about deity there, that the facet of deity that's called the Universal Father, so not thinking in terms of the individual called the Universal Father, and you can call that individual the volitional absolute and is the anchor of this circuit, but thinking about that facet of deity that's called the Universal Father, its inherent functioning, as we discover in the Total Deity Seminar, its inherent functioning is the essence, I guess maybe I should say, the essence of that circuit, that personality circuit. I don't want to get off too far in the weeds there with that, but just that's what they're invoking here for the more advanced student. And then notice how they word the complete and perfect unification. Again, how they're always so precise about the order, like I was trying to be precise about, you know, whether or not I said place and time or time and place. They didn't say perfect and complete, they said complete and perfect. Just like, you know, you can appreciate that. Step one, you know, you ascend to perfection. Step two, you penetrate to completion. All right, so perfect is the foundational element. And completion is built upon that foundation. I see, so they're always being very precise like that. So far as concerns all creature personalities on all levels of intelligent existence and in all the realms of the perfect, perfected, and perfecting universes. So, you know, just giving you that whole sweeping thing. But, you know, delightfully kind of using the word perfecting there, right, to remind you that this, you know, bringing in this perfectingness, you know, as you apply your personality out here in time and space. You don't want to just think in the old dichotomy of perfect and imperfect, right? But this more complex thing of perfect, perfected, and perfecting. And all three are good. All right. I say it all the time, but just notice that they're just subtly suggesting, you know, what they're trying to get you to. They're trying to get you from the potentiality of harmony to the actuality of harmony. See, if you do firmly recognize in the previous paragraph that they're trying to get you to think of the first source and center as the potentiality of harmony only, right? And you have this immediate question in your mind. Well, what's the actuality of harmony then? I mean, when I, you know, with these six, the other six absolutes, I have three that are potentialities of individuality, associativity, unity. I have three that are actualities of individuality, associativity, unity. It's like I've got both potentiality and actuality. You know, and then I've got this oddball that's just the potentiality of harmony. It's just begging, you know, for you to ask the question, huh, I never thought about that. It's there's obviously another one missing. There's a part missing. There's some, I don't have a part with the seven absolutes. And it motivates you to recognize your other parent eventually, right? The actuality of harmony is the mother. So not surprising that, you know, if I'm exercising my will, if I'm actualizing this potential of harmonization, that phenomenon could flow through the actuality of harmony. That could be a conductor for such a phenomenon. If she is the actuality of harmony, right? This actualization of harmony is flowing in that like medium, right? If I want a physical energy to go from point A to point B, I have to conduct it through something that's like it, right? Some physical medium. It's the same thing. All right. They're just subtly suggesting at this point. You know, they haven't even, like I said, you know, they don't sort of put that word mother right out in front of your face until way up there in the Supreme Papers, right? But they're suggesting it here, trying to get you to get to the point where you're curious, like, well, what's the actuality of harmony then? If the Father's the potentiality of harmony, okay? You know, and remember how, you know, that's all, what's between the lines in this whole paper, because it's about universal coordination, and right? It's about the Paradise Trinity and the Mother are the actual means for all of this to happen. Okay. Okay, so let's keep on here.
While God is to and in the universe is all that we have portrayed, nevertheless, to you and to all other God-knowing creatures, he is one. Your father and their father. To personality, God cannot be plural. God is father to each of his creatures, and it is literally impossible for any child to have more than one father.
Okay, so now they're bringing you back a little bit, because you should have started to, you know, with all this talking I've been doing, taking you way off in abstract things, you know, it was probably starting to feel a little bit disconnected. They're trying to re-anchor you. You know, and remind you that when all is said and done, the Father idea is still the highest human concept of God. Okay, so you know, think about this. Yes, there is all kinds of personalized deity, like they said in the previous paragraph, right? That personalized deities manifest. You know, dot dot dot. Why is it that humans, once they got mature enough, focused in on monotheism? Right? Why didn't they focus in on all of the complexity in the Urantia book? You know, God the Absolute, God the Sevenfold, and right now. Because in terms of just your inner initial ability to have any relationship to what we're talking about here, you only have one inroad. As a person, you've got this simple synchronization in the personality circuit with God the Father. Not with God the Absolute, not with God the Sevenfold or anything. Right? There's just one fact, right, that you can just sort of directly synchronize with in the Father's personality circuit. And so, like they're saying in there, nevertheless to you, and to all of the God-knowing creatures, when you actually get to that point, we're on the sixth level of meaning, and you have God-knowingness, you have genuine religious consciousness, what God do you know? The only God that you can know in any sort of a direct experiential way, God the Father, right, in the context of that circuit of volition, Right? As you exercise your will, you strike step with that fact and recognize that you've struck step with that fact. You haven't struck step with God the Sevenfold or God the Absolute or anything else, right? I mean, that's the starting point. Right? And so, and see, in that, he's one. You know, God appears to be one, not many. Right? And in that liminal context, in fact, there is just one. But it's more than just a fact of your circumscribed awareness. There's a truth there. Because from the unity viewpoint, from the top down, there is just God. One God, many facets. One facet's God the Father. One facet's God the Sevenfold. One facet is God the Mother, you know, etc. Right? Facets, you know, there's many facets of the unity that is God. Right? You know, and that's the whole point is, you know, how they shifted in that previous paragraph to that unity viewpoint of saying God the this, God the that, right? Because then they're going, you know, back and reminding you of your experience and seeing how, they, you know, that's the truth of that experience. It's not in fact the case that there's only one personalization of deity from the individuality viewpoint. Right? You know, it's just so simple that when you finally get to this God knowingness and you recognize that this God you know is your Father, like they're saying, it is literally impossible for any child to have more than one father. Right? And so it's just, monotheism is just inescapable, right? In that logical recognition that what this God you're experiencing is your Father, right? And therefore, that's it, right? But the other facets of God that you don't experience in that mode, just because you aren't experiencing them doesn't mean they don't exist, right? There is God the Absolute, and God the Supreme, and God the Mother, and etc. Okay. All right. So just notice how, see, they're trying to get you to recognize this. Personality is this fantastic harmonizing influence, but it establishes an initial bias that you have to overcome. Right? You got to go up and beyond that initial religious experience. Right? You've worked your way up to the religious consciousness on the sixth level of meaning. But there's something beyond that that'll get you to the rest of the story. See what they say next?
Philosophically, cosmically, and with reference to differential levels and locations of manifestation, you may and perforce must conceive of the functioning of plural deities and postulate the existence of plural trinities. But in the worshipful experience of the personal contact of every worshiping personality throughout the master universe, God is one. And that unified and personal deity is our paradise parent, God the Father, the bestower, conservator, and father of all personalities from mortal man on the inhabited worlds to the eternal sun on the central isle of light.
Okay. So you see the very first word of that next paragraph. Right? To go be above, you know, that initial religious experience, you know, and bring in the fullness of recognition of a philosophic consciousness. Right? You go up, you have a scientific consciousness on the fourth level of meaning, a moral consciousness on the fifth level of meaning, a religious consciousness on the sixth level of meaning, and then in the whole of the upper domain of the hourglass, you have a philosophic consciousness, a consciousness of the whole, transcendent of even that highest part, of that religious consciousness. And see, like they're saying, in the full logical recognition of that philosophic perspective, you know logically, there can't be just God the Father. There has to be other facets of deity. For instance, like logically, I can know that there's got to be some means for God the Father on the outside to get to me on the inside via this circuit we've been talking about. Right? The deity that is ubiquitously within, Mother Deity, is that the means, right? See, I recognize that logically. I don't experience that. I recognize it logically, yeah, my philosophic consciousness. And see, that's what they're getting at. You know, so they're saying philosophically you can recognize it, and then you know you also appreciate that cosmically. You know, if you actually go and you know look at the details of what's out there, there isn't just the Father out there. And like I was saying, with reference to differential levels and locations of manifestation, right? You've got a creative mother spirit is just in this local universe and not over there. Right? You know, again, when you bring in that full picture, you logically recognize you need all of this complexity. But that initial experience is very simple, right? And it's just the Father. And it leads you to this initial belief that that's all there is God the Father, because that's all a religious consciousness demands. That's all a religious consciousness experiences. And the fifth epical revelation is saying, okay, you've got that. Now let's go beyond that, and let's fill in the rest of the picture. Because there's more to reality than just you and the other that you're synchronized to. There's all this other complexity, and how does that work? Okay, let's see. And, you know, like I say, perforce must conceive of the functioning of plural deities. You know, that logical demand that they're talking about, that the philosophic pursuit leads you to. Not to mention plural trinities, right? You initially recognize that you need the Paradise Trinity, and then subsequently you recognize you're going to need a Trinity to handle the immediate consequences of the finite, and then a Trinity to handle the immediate consequences of the absentite, and so those two experiential Trinities. All right, let's see. Maybe just one other little thing there. And they say, but in the worshipful experience of the personal contact of every worshiping personality throughout the Master Universe, God is one. Notice how, if you reflect on that, they're talking about two different elements there. There's a worshipful experience, and then in that context, there's a personal contact. Remember that just worship in and of itself in the revelation is this synchronization with the cosmos.
Thinking the truth.
Right, you can go down that path of understanding it as thinking the truth, right? But just initially, you know, you get up to that sixth level of meaning, the level of genuine worship, that level of your ability. I mean, you know, that's the level where you're directly interfacing with the cosmos above your mind. And so you can synchronize with the cosmos in a way that's called worship. And in that context, you can make personal contact. Right? Again, it's just what we've been saying over and over again. Right? I mean, that synchronizing with the mother is the way, the means to have this contact with the Father. Right? Magic doesn't connect you to the Father. She does. Right? There's a literal way to be connected to the Father. It's through her. Right? Worship, you know, genuine worship, just in and of itself, is that precondition for contact with the Father. You gotta plug yourself in to the communication device, if you will, before you can actually communicate. Same way with adoration, like I point out. I mean, to send that oration to the Father, right? You got to do that through something, You can't just magically throw it across the void. Right? She's the way. Right? So, see, you notice, if you look carefully, they're trying to get you to think about all this more logically instead of just, I've got this experience with the Father and I'll just let everything happen magically. I'm not interested in the details of how that actually happens. It's like, well, the more you get interested in the details, the more you're going to discover your other parent. Because for the same reason that I could potentially be in contact with the Father, I must have something from the Father. If I could somehow synchronize in this way called worship, I must have something from her, my other parent, allow me to be like her and synchronize with her. But you don't directly experience the mother like you do the Father. You logically recognize that she must exist because your relationship to the Father is not magical, right? And so you have these two natures. You have a nature that can connect to the Father and a nature that can connect with the way to connect to the Father. You have two parents. Right? See, and you only discover that philosophically. You know, the mother is discovered through philosophic reflection, not through simple experience like the Father is. And that's the way I could keep telling you. The book is constructed that way. Right? You don't have just some simple paragraph or section where you experience the mother, there she is.
That's that.
No, that doesn't give you the truth of the mother. The mother's not like the Father, this thing that you can just have this one-to-one experience with. You have to logically recognize the existence of the mother by synthesizing the whole picture. It's like, oh, logically, I can see there's another element here that's not immediately apparent. I was so delighted in the experience, I was willing to just let it be magical. I didn't care about how it happened. I just was delighted that it happened.
Logic demands it.
But logic demands eventually that it's like, well, now exactly how am I having this experience?
Exactly.
Right? I must have something that allows me, you know, to set up the conditions for this experience. I must have another parent that I don't directly experience, but I've now discovered through philosophic reflection. Oh, for cool. That's the way you discover the mother in the Revelation, see, by logically synthesizing and going, wait a minute, when I put all this together, there's another character in this play that's not immediately apparent.
Yeah, she's not immediately apparent.
No. Right? The way that you're connected to the Father is not immediately apparent. But you know logically it has to be there, because it's not magical. Right? They're trying to get you to find the truth of the mother. Right? If they just put something in a paragraph, you would just falsely interpret that anthropomorphically. You know, like, oh, I've known about Osiris, you know, the father. Now I found Isis. It's like, no, that's not the truth of the mother. She's not just, you know. It's not like Adam and Eve. The mother's different. Right? Adam and Eve both come from our local universe father. The mother is a very different fact than Adam and Eve.
The way I can look at it, if I'm wrong or right. So we've got the father, which is the will, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The volition, and then we've got the eternal Son, which is the personality. Then we've got the infinite Spirit, which is the spirit. The way I look at it, it's a spirit circuit, and with that circuit, that can lead us to God. Because without that, we wouldn't. I mean, we know He's there, but we wouldn't be able to get to Him without the spirit connection. Is that a way to? Can you look at it
well,
that way?
Well, see, the thing is. Yeah, there's a reason why it's monotheism and not, you know, tritheism. You know, that we don't, you know, have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit. The eternal Son just as the absolute Spirit and the conjoint actor as the absolute mind, see, that's just work, you know, anchoring the threefold actuality of reality, right? And the aisle is doing the matter part, right? See, I mean, they're sort of just dealing with the stage. The key part of those other two infinite persons that really relates to you more directly is the fact that it's not just the eternal Son, but the eternal Mother Son. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the infinite Spirit, it's the infinite Mother Spirit. The fact that there's Mother Deity, mm-hmm. right? You know, you have this Father, and together it's a Mother, and that's downstepped mm-hmm. as two parents. Mm-hmm. See? It's really the motherness, it's not their existential nature, you know, as related to mind and spirit substance, right? That really relates to you directly. That's very behind the scenes, right? The next thing that you find after you find the Father is not, you know, God the Son or God the Spirit. It's God the Mother. That's the next step, right? And it's only then in just further logical recognition. It's like, you know, and then you go, oh, okay, wait, I've got matter, mind, and spirit. Okay, there's got to be absolute anchors for those three substances or those three energies. Oh, so I need an aisle and I need a, right? I mean, it's just getting into the further details, like almost kind of getting into the physics instead of just the philosophy of the situation. I mean, and that's... it's like, well, what about the Trinity of Christendom? Doesn't that have a lot to do with me? Yeah, but that's not about the other two persons, you know, the other two infinite persons. Right?
So yeah. The Father, God.
You know, the Trinity of Christendom, that they recognize, you know, has something to do. It's like, well, you got the Father, okay, and we just talked about how you have this definite monotheistic initial connection, right? And then you've got this recognition that someone came 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then you also have this recognition that there's some kind of gift of grace that we all function in that likes gives us common sense and things like that. Right? You know, and that's not the third person, the third infinite person. That's the Holy Spirit ministry. Mm-hmm. Right? See, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the actual God the Son and God the Spirit are answers to questions that you've never asked. You know, and that aren't being addressed in the Trinity of Christendom. That isn't addressing, right? You know, they're just trying to address, well, what about that experience that people had 2,000 years ago? We've got to add a second person, right? And then what about this subtle experience we all seem to have that kind of makes us different than animals? Okay, we've got to add another thing to that. And you can tell in the Bible even that it doesn't seem like it's really a person. It seems more like a ministry. Right? See, and the Revelators are saying, yeah, that doesn't have anything directly to do with the other two infinite persons. Right? There's Creator Sons, and you had one come here. Mm-hmm. And there's a Creator Mother Spirit that gives you this ministry called the Holy Spirit. And see, so like I said, see, it's getting very abstract to really get to God the Son and God the Spirit. But it's just a short little journey of abstraction to go from the immediate non-abstract experience with God the Father to just have that little bit of step back. It's like, well, wait a minute, how is this happening? How is this experience happening? There's got to be one other thing in play here besides me and the Father that I'm experiencing. Who's making this experience possible? And see, it just takes that little bit of reflection and that little bit of abstraction from just the immediacy of the two objects interacting, you and the Father. What's the medium for this interaction? How is this possible? Now, what's mediating this phenomenon? And you're like, oh, there's got to be another player. And it's got to be a player that I possess... a definitive aspect of, because I'm synchronizing with the mechanism, and then in that synchronization, I'm synchronizing with the Father. I've got two parents. Right? There's not just the Father, there's the Mother. But it's a long journey, and you really kind of need the revelation to get to things like God, the supreme, God, the ultimate, God, the absolute, God, the seven, all those things. I mean, those aren't sort of immediately apparent at all. Yeah? Pardon the pun, right? There's only two parents that are immediately apparent, you know? It's just a little bit of reflection. So fundamentally, that's what you're trying to get at. The thing that's most immediately relevant to you, those other God the whatevers are only relevant when you really want to have this very complete logical picture about how all of infinity and eternity work together in a giant elaborate system, right? That encompasses master universes and all this sort of stuff, right? Right, but just about you, right? Step one is to discover, did you have another parent, right?
So the seek first assumes that the will is in place. You and the Father have had your union, and now go seek.
Ask yourself a simple logical question. How did that happen? Right? How did it happen that the God of transcendence just interacted with me? When I'm way within and he's way without, how did that happen? Right? Right? Now, and the more that you start to reflectively focus on that way, you will begin to get this subtle recognition of another experience that has been going under your radar all your life. Like I said, I mean, you know, the Father is this laser beam in your eyeball. There's nothing under the radar about that. But eventually you can start to feel her presence. But it's only when you go beyond yourself. You know, like the work is important, the self is not. Right? The Father is all about this interaction between you, the self, and him, the self, right? But if you start to, you know, get the self out of the picture, right, and that laser beam into the eye of that self from the Father, there's another presence there that you can find in the work, the doing something instead of just the being something, right? Your other parent, right? You know, and how do I synchronize with that parent? Well, I have to do that self-forgetting thing, which is called
worship.
Right, see? Right? You know, think about how you're praying to the Father. See, that's self-reminding. Right? To find the other parent, you got to get into that self-forgetting mode. It's worship.
Yeah, I keep praying. He keeps saying, forget about it.
And once you find that other parent, you find her ubiquity, her stability. Okay. Let's see if we can get some more done here.
5, deity unity. The oneness, the indivisibility of paradise deity is existential and absolute. There are 3 eternal personalizations of deity, the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit. But in the paradise trinity, they are actually 1 deity, undivided and indivisible.
Okay, so you get this one little paragraph set off by a large paragraph break. They're bringing in a contrast. We've been talking about unity, and you notice the title of this one is Deity Unity, not unification. Right? So again, we got the unity thing. Fundamental quality of deity is unity, so that seems pretty straightforward. But it's a little bit more than that, as you can tell by this first paragraph. So in contrast to unity, continuumness, which is divisible, there's oneness, indivisibility. Right? Okay, and the first example of this that they give you is that undivided deity idea, right? Of, you know, I start with something all together and I divide out the 3 parts that are dividable. And I have the deity of for the 3 persons, God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. But I have some deity that remains that's undividable, indivisible, at the Paradise Trinity. That kind of unity. there's unity, and boy, and then there's like this really rock solid unity. See, but in the Paradise Trinity, they are actually, and they italicize actually one deity. Remember how I was telling you that, you know, if once it sinks in, you're talking about the potentiality of harmony. You're just, it's begging the question. It's like, well, what's the actuality of harmony? Why did they italicize actually here? Right? Because where mother deity stems from the Paradise Trinity. See, so it's all between the lines here, see, right? And then the other little tidbit that's between the lines there, you're going, wow, this is like really in black and white. They're saying that the Paradise Trinity is an expression of oneness. So the Paradise Trinity must be the blank one. And I've told you that before, right? I mean, you finally unpack the deity perspective in the total deity seminar, and you finally figure out that the Paradise Trinity is the co-infinite one. Not the finite one, not the supreme one, not the et cetera, et cetera. The co-infinite one, that's the oneness of the Paradise Trinity that they're referring to there. But that's a way advanced thought, right? So they're not talking about it directly, but that's between the lines here. So they've tossed in that, and you see, and it's kind of, again, just subtly bringing in, what about the Paradise Trinity? And what about the Mother? Okay, what else do they say?
From the original Paradise Havona level of existential reality, two sub-absolute levels have differentiated. And thereon have the Father, Son, and Spirit engaged in the creation of numerous personal associates and subordinates. And while it is inappropriate in this connection to undertake the consideration of absonite deity unification on transcendental levels of ultimacy, it is feasible to look at some features of the unifying function of the various deity personalizations in whom divinity is functionally manifest to the diverse sectors of creation and to the different orders of intelligent beings.
Okay, so they want to bring in just this little bit. It's obviously way too complicated to bring in all the absonite stuff like they're saying. But you know, just like they mentioned up above, once, you know, if you bring in the Paradise Trinity, you have those other two trinities. Really, really, you know, mentioned that here just a little bit ago about the other trinities. There's two sub-absolute levels. You know, you think of those three persons as engaged in the creation of numerous personal associates and subordinates, right, relative to all that complexity in those two levels. And we'll set aside all of the complexities of the transcendental, of the absonite. But what about the ultimate trinity? What about, you know, some of these issues that we can get our hands on a little bit more in thinking about, you know, about the finite and its culmination, sort of, it's culminating. Okay, so now they've got some interesting things that they're throwing in here. Let's see, where, okay, I lost my spot. Where was it? Somewhere in there. Okay, so kind of right, sort of in the middle, where it says, and while it is inappropriate in this connection to undertake the consideration of absonite deity unification. Notice the deity is not capitalized there. Okay. Whereas, you know, a little bit farther on, you see unifying function of various deity personalizations. You see deity is capitalized. Okay. Again, see, they're doing these things, and you're supposed to, you know, initially you can just blow through them, but, you know, if you're a little more advanced, you're going, what are they doing here? They seem to be suggesting things here. Without thinking about anything with the total deity seminar sort of complexity, a way to start, if you see them doing this, they're using both lowercase and uppercase, is just to think of the lowercase d deity as a bottom-up suggestion, and the capital D deity as a top-down. Okay, so you see in that first paragraph, when they were talking about the Paradise Trinity, and they were using capital D deity there. You know, after all, were we describing? A very top-down picture where we had sort of, we're thinking of deity all together, and then there's three measures that we separate out, and a measure left above, behind, right? It's a very top-down point of view, capital D deity. When they're doing that lowercase d deity unification, you're thinking absonite deity unification. It sounds like it's going bottom up, right? It's a unification process, right? And you've obviously flipped to the individuality viewpoint because they're talking about numerous personal associates and subordinates. So there's basically in front of you, you have these individuals, and you're thinking about a phenomenon that's going upward, and there's more and more unification as the phenomenon goes upward. But you're reminded that some of those individuals, there's actual deity in play. You can't see it directly because you're thinking about things from the bottom up, and you're just thinking about the individuals, right? So you don't use capital D deity, right, where you're actually looking at the deity substance and thinking about the deity substance and not about the individuals. But you can remind yourself about the parallel to that deity substance, capital D deity, by using the lowercase d deity. Right? And that deity is involved even though you're just looking at the individuality picture. And then they go on and they say, the capital deity, but see, the various deity personalizations in whom divinity is functionally manifest. So again, they flip you around and say, you've got personalizations of deity. For instance, down when you're thinking about the personalities of God the Sevenfold, right? You got Creator, Sons, and Ancients of Days, and what have you, right? They're God, they're personalized deity. But let's not so much thinking about it from the deity, in the deity perspective, from the unity viewpoint, but just about from the individuality viewpoint. And they're going to have deity likeness. They're going to have divinity. In whom divinity is functionally manifest. So see how they're playing back and forth. And initially, you don't have any recognition they're playing back and forth. But
they are.
Right? They're switching capitalizations and stuff. Okay. Okay, what else? What do they say next here?
The present functioning of divinity in the super universes is actively manifest in the operations of the supreme creators, the local universe creator sons and spirits, the super universe ancients of days, and the seven master spirits of paradise. These beings constitute the first three levels of God the Sevenfold, leading inward to the universal Father. And this entire domain of God the Sevenfold is coordinating on the first level of experiential deity in the evolving supreme being.
Okay, so now notice again, they've got function at the beginning of that paragraph. They have functioning of divinity, just like they had divinity is functionally manifest in the previous one. Right? I mean, deity functions, right, in a direct way. Right? But we're thinking about all these individuals, and we know there's deity behind the individuals, if you will, right? that their deity likeness is not like what my divinity is going to be. I mean, theirs is very direct. I mean, there's deity behind them that isn't behind me. I'm not God. So their divinity is a very pure, direct expression of deity likeness because there's literally deity behind them. parallel to them, or however you want to think about it, right? You know, and that deity functioning is manifesting in these divine individuals. All right. So you've got those supreme creators, you know, that they itemize there. Creator sons, creator mother spirits, ancients of days, master spirits, the supreme creators. They're setting the stage for the next section that we're not going to get into tonight. You know, where they're going to go with that. But you know, you can see they're bringing in the God the Sevenfold. And they're reminding you that, you know, remember what the title of this section is, Deity Unity. That even when you start, when you go beyond your experiences with the Father and your initial logical recognition of the Mother, and you start getting into all these details, like Creator Sons and Ancients of Days and all this sort of stuff, you want to do that, keeping yourself, you know, reminding yourself that there's an inherent unity there, because the phenomenon is in parallel with deity, and the fundamental quality of deity is unity. And you can just remind yourself of that very simply, that there's something that all those individuals have in common. They come into existence in many different ways, and they function at many different levels in many different ways. Right? But they have something in common, that they all have a type of deity behind them that we, like I said, we often don't talk about, sevenfold type deity. You know, you think of a creator son as you know, having father type deity and son type deity together as one, right? Because of its, you know, that creator son's two parents, right? The universal father and the eternal son. But there's also another aspect to them, sevenfold type nature. And that gives them a commonality to Ancients of Days. It's not immediately apparent, because the Ancients of Days are coming from the Paradise Trinity. Right? They're Trinity origin beings. You know, and the Creator Sons are coming from the Father and the Son. But there's something, there's a way in which they're unified. There's a deity unity behind them. That is that deity called the Sevenfold. Okay. So that despite all of their diversity, there's a deity unity, quote unquote, see, to what they're doing, what all those supreme creators are doing. And because there's that deity unity behind them all and all their seemingly diverse actions, all those actions come together in a unified way that they're hinting at there. And this entire domain of God the Sevenfold is coordinating on the first level of experiential deity in the evolving supreme being. Okay, again, they have lowercase d deity, so they're, you know, they're thinking about this bottom-up phenomenon of moving up towards the supreme being. Right? And in the next section, they'll talk directly about how the supreme creators are involved in one aspect of what's going to become the supreme being, the Almighty Supreme. But there's another element. See, again, like you can focus in on, okay, the supreme creators, and through them in this unified way, because of sevenfold deity, they manifest the almighty part of the supreme, the upwelling, right, bottom-up part, experiential lowercase d deity, you know, reminding you of that bottom-up. But if you step back, you go, wait a minute, but how you know, fundamentally, how is that going to you know, really get all together into that eventual transcendent being, the supreme being? You see the hint there. Is coordinating the entire domain of God, the sevenfold, is coordinating, right? Right. There's Mother Deity, right? That coordinating, right? That upwelling of the Almighty is in the context of that top-down Mother Deity. See, so and using this kind of simple lowercase uppercase D, you have a lowercase D deity and an uppercase D deity. You have the Almighty and the Mother, right, coming together, you know, into the Supreme, and as an individual, the Supreme Being. Right, so again, just between the lines, see, you notice there a lot of times there's. If you just step back and think about this section, you guys are like, well, it seems like kind of a hodgepodge of things thrown together, right? Now, obviously, it didn't sound that way from what I, you know, hopefully from what I was just saying. But you can see underlying it all, it's a set of suggestions to get you to reflect on some bigger pictures and to begin to think about how it is that you, no matter where you look, you have this coordination going on. There's this universal coordination. Remember what our block title is here for these two papers. That's what's between the lines all the time. See, even recognizing that the title of the block of two papers should be universal coordination, you know, that they don't tell you that. You have to recognize there's a block of two papers, and you have to recognize what's common about the two papers. And they're trying to get you at this synthesis, into this mode of synthesizing, and really starting to appreciate the whole and the individuality of the whole. You know, and once you recognize you have another parent, you know, you also logically recognize that parent stems from a fact that, you know, that experiential deity must go back to some existential fact, and that existential fact is the Paradise Trinity. Oh, by the way, did you notice, look at the very first sentence again of this section, you know, the oneness, the indivisibility of the Paradise Deity is existential and absolute. Now, and you go on and you recognize they're talking about the Paradise Trinity, right? Paradise Trinity is existential and absolute. Well, there it is again. Why aren't there eight absolutes of infinity? See what they're doing, right? See, they're just, you know, they don't literally put it out there and say, why aren't there eight absolutes? But they, you know, okay, it's absolute. All of these suggestions, trying to get you to the point where you ask some questions of yourself and penetrate and recognize this bigger picture. Right? That's what they're doing here, and they're reminding you of the relationship of you know, of the Supreme Being to the Paradise Trinity. We'll get to that next time as well. You know, that they tell you up in the foreword. They're trying to get you to synthesize all kinds of things here. Okay, let's just do this last little bit.
On paradise and in the central universe, deity unity is a fact of existence. Throughout the evolving universes of time and space, deity unity is an achievement.
Okay, so you can see how that's you know, just what I was just hinting at. Getting you to reflect on, you know, it's a fact of existence, right? It's a fact of existential deity, right? The central universe is the domain of Paradise Trinity, that existential deity, right? And then they're trying to get you to think about, there's a whole phenomenon that stems from that. Throughout the evolving universes of time and space, deity unity is an achievement, okay? But it was capital D deity there. Again, it's not exactly, you know, see, it didn't say deity unification. It said deity unity. And so on the one hand, you know, you're thinking of something that's a unification process that's coming up. but then recognize that the only reason that a unification process occurs going up is because there's a pre-existent context in which that's occurring, in which that phenomenon is upwelling. Before there's a deity unification, there is a pre-existent deity unity that was established from the top down. The Mother. Right? The Almighty is not a magical phenomenon that just comes together out with no context in which it exists. Right? It exists in a pre-existent context. Mother Deity, which is, as they're hinting at, is this down-stepped expression coming from the Paradise Trinity, that existential deity. And they put you in that mode in the beginning paragraph by not talking about the Paradise Trinity in some bottom-up way, but in a top-down way, right? As that undivided deity. It's all about... See, the real meat of this paper is not in the words at all. Most of the words are just suggestions to try to get you to reflect. We've already talked about the real fundamental point. Why would you want to go through all this effort to try to read between the lines and notice all these curious changes of capitalization and stuff? It's so that you can begin to step back from the power of your experience with the Father. And begin to step back from that and think about that experience in a context. Begin to reflect objectively on yourself and your experiences. And once you step back and you're not just in the line of that experience, right, there's a context. And that context is the Mother. It's your other parent. And that's really the whole point. The book is the first epical revelation of God the Mother. It's a very masterly constructed effort to get you to reflect, to go beyond religion to philosophy, and discover your other parent. Yep.
It's really the only way to get to any meaning in this paper is to recognize that. Otherwise, it's just, that sounds good. What does it mean? It doesn't mean very much. Let's get on.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, in some parts, it's like, this seems like a really disjoint set of facts that I don't understand why this section is even here, right. See, yeah, they're parts, but you're looking for the truth, not the facts. You're looking for the whole, right? The more it seems like a hodgepodge of parts, the more you should be earnestly looking for the whole that's there, the truth that's there. It's probably one way of thinking about the revelation. Those spots that in many ways seem empty initially, they aren't really. They're filled with the Mother. They seem empty because you're just looking for the Father. It's like, well, this is not about the Father, and this is not about the Father. We're about to go into part three, and we're going to be reading about paleontology and stuff. It's like, well, this is not about the Father. This is not about... Right? This seems empty. What's the point of even reading these?
Yeah.
It's not really empty. It's about your other parent. Right? Who's the God of evolution? Not God the Father. God the Mother is the God of evolution. Right? Your other parent. Papers about the evolution are about God the Mother. Right? They appear to be empty because you have this bias where, unless it's talking about the Father, you believe there's nothing there. Right? And that the book is balanced. It's about both your parents. Okay. All right. all right. And so next time, you see, we're finally done with kind of building up here with. We have the physical and the intellectual and the spiritual and personality and the deity. Kind of move through the energies and all the substances, and now they're going to get into sort of a grander picture, as you can tell by the title. So we'll move into that more sweeping space, but it gets a bit technical at times. Right. See, so you've got to be willing to, just settle in and try to, get a hold of all these details a little bit so that you can find this, the delights of this bigger picture, right? That the delights of a self-forgetting picture as opposed to just the delights of the self-reminding picture. All right, let's take a moment, everyone.